Good evening, friends. This is your host, Franz Weinschenk, happy to welcome you to Valley Writers Read, where, as you probably know by now, only folks who live right here in the Valley get to read their literary prose. And tonight, Hope Knisley, who lives in Reedley, is going to be our writer reader. She'll be reading a story of hers entitled Whack Her Good, Lord. Here she is, Hope Knisley, Whack Her Good, Lord.
I don't believe in miracles, I know what's real, I don't pretend. I don't believe in miracles or stories with a happy end. Life is no one's friend.
Whack Her Good, Lord. Even before she was fully awake, Ivana could sense the movement in the room. She had hoped to sleep longer, but somehow she never seemed to be able to do it. Late nights at Armando's left her exhausted, and last night's fight with Raleigh made her cringe at the thought of seeing him this morning. If only she hadn't always been an early riser. Her mother must have cursed her by giving her the middle name that had plagued her so much of her life. Ivana Sunrise. Her mother still loved it, but Ivana hated it as much as she had when she was a kid. She never could sleep in. Ivana's parents had moved to the On the Glory Road commune when Ivana and her brother Matthew were young. They only spent a few years there in the woods of Northern California, but it was long enough for them to add Sunrise and Naphtali to the children's names. Her mother liked to tell them that Ivana and Matthew both meant God's gift, so even if they rejected their commune names, they still were connected to the faith of their communal past. Thinking about all the ways her life had been impacted by those years at the commune had always made her stifle a groan. She and Matthew, when they were feeling magnanimous, called it their lentil Jesus years. The rest of the time, they referred to it as their freaks of glory days. Most of the kids at the commune had been given names that were either biblical or nature-based, sometimes both. When her family left the commune to move to the Bay Area, Ivana and Matthew reclaimed their birth names. Ivana was in an elementary school in Oakland when she had laid down the law and refused to let anyone call her Sunrise anymore. That day was one that she would always remember. That kid Alex was the last person ever to make fun of her name. It had been a sunny and warm spring day, and they were on the playground. As she sailed down the slide, Alex stood at the bottom, taunting, "Hey, Sonny Liston!" She knew all about the surly boxer who died the winter before that. It was a tame distortion of her name, but something about it made her snap. She had climbed onto the teeter-totter and balanced on the fulcrum, then hollered out to all who would listen. The kids stopped playing and stared silently while she screamed her warning, "My name is Ivana, and if any of you freaks ever call me anything but Ivana again, I'll beat you to a bloody little pulp." Of course, being kids, two more boys, one of them Alex, had tried it, and she remembered exactly how good each swing of her fists had felt. If they wanted to call her Sonny Liston, they'd get Sonny Liston. When she got home from school that afternoon, she told her mother that she was to be called Ivana at home, too. The school called her mother to discuss Ivana's behavior, but she hadn't been punished. Her mother just told Ivana to try to use her brains instead of her fists after that, and she was never called Sunrise again. Concentrating on his moves without opening her eyes, Ivana could tell exactly where Raleigh was in the room and what he was doing. She could hear the rattle of coins and keys as he swept them off the dresser and into his pocket. She heard the eerie screech of the dresser drawer as it opened and knew he was reaching for a sweatshirt. She didn't want him to know she was awake, and she certainly didn't want to talk to him or hear his voice. He would be off to work soon, and then she could have a leisurely morning without hearing him complain about the mess or demanding that she eat breakfast when all she wanted was a cup of coffee and maybe a piece of toast. And after last night, when he had threatened to cut down their palm tree, she was not ready to talk to him. Raleigh had never liked the palm tree, although he had been nice about it, more or less, when she first planted it. It wasn't so much that Ivana liked it, but it reminded her of Jolene. She'd planted it the Saturday after she had talked to her doctor about her hearing loss. In junior high school, she had gone swimming in some lake in the Cascades when her family was on vacation. She had gotten an infection in her ear, and her parents hadn't taken her to the doctor right away. By the time they got to the doctor, her hearing had been severely damaged. Several years ago, she had read in some magazine that there might be something that could be done for hearing loss as long as the person had some hearing left. She got her hopes up, went to her doctor, and asked if a cochlear implant might be possible. She remembered what the doctor told her and just how deflating it felt. "We're working with cochlear implants now, but it's expensive, it's risky, and it's not guaranteed," he had shrugged and continued, "particularly not at your age. You'd be better off just being thankful that you have some hearing and live with it." With that insensitive speech, Ivana was seething. She had been living with it for a long time. No one needed to tell her that. What an idiot. When she left his office, she had driven to the landscape center to buy a little sago palm to plant in their front yard. It didn't help her hearing loss, but it made her happy to see it when she looked out their living room window. Raleigh didn't say much about it then. Things were better between them at the time. He'd been kind of sweet about it at first, and even offered to help plant it. "Go ahead and plant it, if it makes you feel better." He'd trailed off while he was looking at the palm, then kind of laughed and admitted that he couldn't see the point of a palm tree. It was, in fact, one of the many things that he disliked about Southern California. He hated palm trees and didn't really want one in their yard. He had waited a while to bring it up again, knowing how much she liked it, but eventually he got around to it. "What do you like about palm trees? What are they good for?" he'd asked. "Nothing, really. They certainly don't provide shade, and what good is a tree that doesn't provide shade when you live in one of the hottest parts of the country? And there's no fruit either. Really, when you think about it, they're just plain worthless." "Not true," she had countered. "Some palms produce dates, so they aren't all fruitless." Then she had continued, "And what's wrong with just being there for beauty and comfort? Maybe that's all a palm tree needs to do." "That's no date palm in our yard," Raleigh had laughed, "and welcome to California, the state that is all show and no substance. You know what we say about that in Texas? We say all hat and no cattle. Yep, this is the right place for palm trees." Raleigh was from western Texas, and there were a few choice things Ivana could say about Texas and Texans if she let it all out. Raleigh's family didn't exactly do much to help raise anyone's estimation of humanity. In her opinion, they were just poorer versions of the politicians they voted into office. She had only been there one time. Their comments about people they didn't like, which was anyone not white, Christian, and heterosexual, had been difficult to stomach. It was her opinion that people from Texas shouldn't throw stones, or their Stetsons, at others. Not that she felt like defending all Californians, but it was clearly the principle of it all. So Raleigh be damned. Palm trees made her feel at home. Not that she had lived any place long enough to feel like it was home. After the Northern California commune and a few years in Oakland, her parents had moved around a lot. Her dad's company, coupled with his own itchy feet, had forced them to move often. That was one reason why she was staying put now, not leaving Raleigh or this city, even though she'd lost interest in both long ago. Of all the places they had lived when she was a kid, the one she remembered most and liked the best was Sarasota, Florida. They'd stayed there the longest, and that was where she met Jolene. In their yard in Sarasota, they had several palm trees. That was what her palm tree reminded her of Jolene and Sarasota. Those had been the happiest years of her childhood. Jolene was her neighbor and several years older than Ivana. One of the things they liked to do was ride bike through Pinecraft, the part of Sarasota where the Amish lived during the winter. They would ride past the park to see the Amish kids playing volleyball. It was fascinating to watch them, especially the girls in their long dresses and with those strings on their white caps flapping when they jumped and spiked the ball. Their legs were brown and muscular. That was what she remembered most, how strong and athletic the girls looked. When she and Jolene watched them play, they could see how the boys' eyes followed the girls and the smirks that they barely concealed. That would trigger Jolene's speculations about their lives and whether the girls ever kissed any of those boys. "They're kind of pretty in a strange sort of way," Jolene would say, "and I'll bet they're pretty sexy beneath those dresses, too. Just look at those legs, what little you can see of them." They were always people watching when she was with Jolene. They would try to imagine other lives, especially the parts that involved sex. Jolene was more interested in that than Ivana, but it was kind of fun to speculate with her. They could spend hours making up entire life histories for people they observed. Then when she was 12, her dad moved the family to Houston, where they stayed for only 6 months before heading off to Portland for several years. She still missed Jolene. They wrote to each other through high school, but after that their correspondence slowly dwindled to nothing. One of these days, she should do a Facebook or a Google search to see if she could find her now. Ivana could hear Raleigh in the kitchen. He was making his lunch, which meant he'd be out the door soon and off to work. He was so excruciatingly, painfully consistent in his routine. She had been a waitress at Armando's for over 15 years now. She tended to stick with things. If he dared cut down her palm tree, however, she might not stick with Raleigh. Hopefully it was just a late-night, semi-drunken threat. In her own inebriation, she had threatened him with bloody demise, shades of her third-grade declaration, which only made him laugh. The boys in third grade had found out what she was capable of. Raleigh might want to watch his steps. Ivana didn't have to go to work until 4, so after Raleigh left, she waited a while before getting up. She dawdled over coffee, made herself an egg salad sandwich for lunch, read several chapters in The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, checked her Facebook page, reaffirmed that she found most of what people posted and reposted to be boring and repetitive, and then sat on the back porch before getting ready for work. She was happy that her job at Armando's was the late shift and not lunch, first because the tips were better, and second because she could be at home while Raleigh was at work. By the time he came home, she was at work. She had to be there at 4 to prep for dinner and was there until they cleaned up after the 11 p.m. closing. Usually it was midnight before she got home, yet another reason why she wished she could sleep later than she seemed to be able to do. This wasn't where she thought she'd be in middle age. She and Jolene had often talked about college and careers. Jolene was focused on marine biology. Ivana had gone back and forth between becoming the first woman astronaut and being a high school history teacher. She had liked so many things then. She wasn't sure when those dreams began to fade. Damn, but she was thinking about Jolene a lot these days. That was partly, she knew, because of the prayer people who met in her section every week. Every time they came in, she thought of Jolene. These were the kind of people Jolene would have tried to figure out. What made them believe in prayer and do it everywhere? Did they pray before sex like they pray before meals? It always made her wonder. Did they think about what they were saying? If they could hear themselves, wouldn't it sound strange to their own ears? Her mother had left her Jesus people days behind, but she never dropped the language about what miracles could happen if you believe, about faith that defies reason, about end times, and less often about love and grace. She taught Ivana that grace was an acronym for God's riches at Christ's expense. Even though that made no sense, Ivana had thought the whole thing might be okay if it was all about love and grace instead of end times and sin. The part about something being true because you believe it to be true was the strangest bit of circular logic she ever encountered. There was no way to refute the old just-believe routine. To Ivana, it always felt like you had to park your brain and reason at the door so you could say things like, "You have to accept it on faith." She could replay her mother's response in her head. "The good news is foolishness to those who do not believe." Once when she was in high school, Ivana had told her mother that all religions do the same thing. They make people quit thinking for themselves and distrust anyone who isn't like them. Her mother wasn't too happy with her for that, but that wasn't what had caused her mother to stop speaking to her. That came after her mother had prayed at the dinner table, "Have your way with me, Lord." When the prayer was over, Ivana looked up and told her that this part of the prayer sounded creepy, suggestive, and more than a bit dirty. When her mother began to talk to Ivana again, after a few days of rigid silence, she still carried the dejected look that said, "If you loved me, you wouldn't do this to me." Ivana considered asking Shauna to trade sections tonight. The prayer group always wanted one certain table that was in her section, and tonight she didn't have the patience for their talk and their praying. But when she thought about it, she realized that she was intrigued by them in the same way she and Jolene had been fascinated by the Amish young people. Somehow, she'd find the patience. As the dinner crowd began to fill Armando's, Ivana kept moving. Lately, her legs had begun to ache about a half hour into the evening rush, and tonight was no different. As long as she kept moving and kept her mind on work, not her legs, she was okay. The praying group had not yet arrived, but they often came a little late so that they were more certain to have the corner table at the back of her section. Ivana had learned to watch people carefully so that she could follow their lip movement and where they were pointing so she'd get their order right. She'd become so adept that most people never noticed that her hearing was seriously diminished. It became a bit more difficult to pull off when she was waiting on a larger group. With a full table, there was always some joker who kept interrupting his friends while they ordered, throwing in smart-ass comments to make the others laugh and turn toward him when they were ordering. Why was it that every large group had a joker? It made her wonder about people and groups and whether the sheer numbers mandated a joker, a leader, a quiet follower, etc. She really should have studied sociology or perhaps psychology, all of which is a moot point since I didn't even go to college, Ivana thought with her usual pinprick of regret. Before the rush, she and Shauna coordinated their break times. The two of them always looked out for each other, helped each other with large orders, and cleared each other's tables when one of them got in a pinch. The other waiters and waitresses weren't always so cooperative. Most of them were college-age kids who were in this for the short run. Some worked here while they decided where to go to college or before they went away to grad school. The worst ones were the kids on summer vacation. They were young and waiting for the next semester, for the big times, for the rest of life, waiting as if they had all the time in the world. They were at the point in life when they think they will never run out of time for all the things they could ever dream of doing. Every book could be read, every country could be visited, every career path could be pursued. Ivana wondered when that changed, when one comes to the realization that you need to quit waiting and choose quickly, that it was now or never. Ivana noticed that Shauna had a table that was getting a little drunk and obnoxious, so she kept waiting for an opening to step in and help out. Catching Shauna's eye, she motioned to indicate that she'd help deliver the food. Shauna rolled her eyes and nodded gratefully. Back at table 4, she waited patiently for the couple who had changed their order several times already. While she waited, she noticed that Charity, the hostess, was leading the people from the praying group to the corner table which had just opened up. Miraculously opened at the right time, Ivana grinned to herself. Must be great to be able to pray your way into parking spaces and the right table at restaurants. The indecisive couple finally decided on linguine di mare, pollo marsala, with bruschetta al pomodoro for an appetizer. Hopefully, they wouldn't take so much time deciding on dessert, but it looked likely that it would take them at least 15 minutes just to decide whether or not they wanted to look at the dessert menu. Ivana couldn't help but think that it would be hell to sit in on their decision-making sessions, what color to paint the house, what to name their kid, whether to go out to a movie or watch the next Netflix offering, or all those other large and small decisions in life. Ivana delivered the order to the kitchen while the busboy took water to the praying table. She walked over to ask if she could get them anything to start with, and they all wanted iced teas. "Can you bring us the spirit of wisdom?" the guy with the striped shirt at the end of the table asked, while his friends all obliged with a laugh. So, Ivana thought, there's a joker here, too. They just have different jokes. With a bit of a jolt, she noticed for the first time that he had an earring. Why it surprised her, she couldn't say. She supposed that even men who prayed could wear earrings. "I think you're on your own for that one," Ivana replied dryly, to which the guy answered with that polite humility that bumped up against smugness. "No, we're not on our own for that one." When he emphasized the "not," he lifted his eyebrows slightly and gave a small upward nod, indicating that they had help from a higher power. Ivana gave a little shrug. As soon as she left the table with their orders, they began their prayer time. Ivana hoped that they would be finished before the food was ready. It was always a bit awkward when she was bringing their plates and they had their eyes closed, and she knew from experience that they didn't look up when they were in prayer, not even for the food. Last week she had just put things down in front of each one, in front of their arms, which most of them had folded on the table. She had hoped she got each dish in the right place, but figured that if she hadn't, they could switch the plates themselves. Either that or they could look up when she arrived. Tonight the prayer time wasn't as long, and by the time the food came they were laughing and talking. Earring guy asked her about her hearing, said that he had been noticing for the past several weeks how carefully she watched each person when they ordered. Ivana didn't reveal much, just told him that she had this hearing loss for a long time. He smiled at her and didn't push the conversation further. As the dinner rush began to subside, Shauna went on her break, leaving Ivana to watch both sections. When Shauna returned, Ivana stepped out on the front porch for some fresh air. She hadn't had a cigarette in years, but tonight she was tired, cranky, and craving a smoke. On her way toward the door, she stopped Joey, the evening manager, to ask for one. Sticking it in her pocket, Ivana grabbed some matches from the cashier's podium and walked out the door. She didn't notice the praying group until she opened the door, or she would have gone out the back instead. The back alley, even with all its nasty odors, would have been better. Ivana tried to step around them, but they were too close to the line of traffic. They had gotten up to leave a while ago, yet here they were on the porch praying. Again. She wondered whether this went on everywhere they went. As Ivana sidestepped their circle, Earring Guy paused in the middle of his prayer and looked up. "Wait," he said. "You told me about your hearing loss. Wouldn't you like to be made whole again?" Ivana stared at him without expression, despite her annoyance. Made whole again? What did that mean? She nodded, however, thinking once again about the doctor who had told her to just live with it. Of course she wanted her hearing back, but she certainly didn't think of herself as not whole without it. "Step into our circle." Earring Guy's words were invitational, but his tone was aggressive. "We'll lay hands on you and pray for you. Jesus can restore your hearing. He's right here. He's just waiting for us to ask him for a creative miracle. Tonight is the night." The night for what? Ivana hesitated, trying to come up with an escape, but there was no time. With six bright faces looking at her in anticipation, she couldn't think that fast. "How can I say no? He doesn't look like a man who accepts no." Ivana stepped half-heartedly into the circle and felt all their hands on her ear, on her shoulders, on her head, on her arm. One hand was a bit too close to her boob for comfort, so she turned just enough to force the hand to slip around to her arm instead. She was intensely aware of the palm on her right shoulder, the one that was so sweaty and hot that it almost burned her skin through her blouse. As Iringai began to pray aloud, she could see the rest of their lips moving, although she could not hear their soft pleas. Ivana automatically closed her eyes, as her mother had taught her, but then she couldn't resist peeking to see their expressions. She noticed a couple walking into Armando's and witnessed their furtive glances to the side as they hurried past. This must look pretty strange, she thought. Immediately, she closed her eyes again. When the hands touching her began to shake, Ivana felt her body tense. Her resignation took a swift turn towards panic. She felt her legs from hip to ankle go weak, as if they were disintegrating beneath her. She caught herself before she sank to the porch floor, spinning in a whirlwind of fear and disgust at her own inability to have refused the order from this arrogant prick. What have I gotten myself into? Why, oh why did I step into this circle like I'm some little lamb unable to say no to its own slaughter? The circle was too tight for an escape. The feeling she had was much like the sensation she got right at the apex of the roller coaster. She could feel the bile moving up her esophagus, and she swallowed hard to halt the progression. About that time, one of the women shrieked above the murmuring and the prayer, loud enough that even Ivana could hear the words, "Whack this woman, good Lord! Whack her with a holy encounter!" Before her last word was out of her mouth, the guy across from Ivana bawled, "Taking it to the streets, Lord! We can feel your presence right here on this street, Lord!" Ivana shuddered and thought, "We're not in the streets, we're in some strip mall in the burbs." In seconds, it was over, and their hands quit shaking. Another 10 seconds passed, and they dropped their prayer poses. The circle of people still barred her escape, and they were all looking at her hopefully, smiling. She harbored a fleeting thought that if it weren't for the expectant smiles, this must be almost what prison feels like. Several of them were crying. "They're crying, for Christ's sakes," Ivana thought, "over me." But immediately she retracted that thought. "No, not over me. They're crying over the experience." Her panic had subsided. Now all she felt was uncertainty. She just wanted to get back to work. Now she really needed that cigarette, damn it. But she didn't have much break time left. Why did I let them steal my entire break? Ivana stepped away from the group, reeling a little. Closing her eyes always made her a bit dizzy, uncomfortable with the loss of both hearing and eyesight, even if only temporarily. It took a moment to regain her equilibrium. The woman next to her noticed her near misstep and took her by the elbow. "You feel it too, don't you?" the woman asked. "Was this the first time anyone prayed for you?" Ivana looked at her for clarification, unable to catch what she said. The woman repeated her query, a bit louder this time. Ivana thought of her days at On the Glory Road commune and felt herself almost getting the giggles. "More times than you could imagine," she thought, but just shrugged. "You have now experienced the Holy Spirit," the woman pronounced loudly. Ivana's smile was brief, fading before it even appeared. She had experienced something all right. She was pretty certain it wasn't any spirit, holy or otherwise. But their hopeful confidence kept her from contradicting them. As she turned to walk away, they gave her their tearful promises to see her next week. She breathed a sigh full of both sadness in the face of their earnestness and the relief that comes with release. Back in the restaurant, Ivana maneuvered her way between the tables and then kept going. From the corner of her eye, she could see that Shauna was trying to catch her attention, but Ivana ignored her. She knew that Joey would be looking for her soon, too. On through the kitchen she went, almost breaking into a sprint as she swept past the cooks and the busboys and out through the back door. She didn't care that her break was over. The customers could wait. Neither did she care that she was lonely and in a dead-end job. She didn't care that Raleigh was at home awaiting her return, and if he had cut down her palm tree, or if he had any plans to do it. Well, with the way she felt right at this moment, what did anything matter? As for her, she was through waiting on anyone and anything, and even on Raleigh, especially on Raleigh. Once in the alley, she lit the cigarette she had taken from Joey and inhaled the smoke deep into her lungs, holding it until she reached the sensation she was looking for, the burning weightlessness of the first inhalation. Ivana leaned her trembling body against the wall. She could smell the rotting garbage in the bin in the corner, and she could see that the moon was almost full. A bony yellow cat jumped out of a box by the garbage bin, hissed at her, then meandered down the alley to disappear into the shadows. Ivana exhaled a smoke ring and closed her eyes. She had never been able to blow a smoke ring, no matter how hard she tried. This one was near perfect, and for one fraction of a second, it hovered in her direct line of sight to the moon, a perfect white circle, backlit by the lunar glow.
That was Hope Knisley reading Whack Her Good, Lord. It's the story of Ivana, who, when she was a youngster, along with her parents and brother, lived in a commune. At the time, everyone called her Sunrise, but because she hated that name, she made them all stop. Her mom is extremely religious, but to young Ivana, and I'm quoting here, quote, "It seems like you have to park your brain and reason at the door so you can say things like, you have to accept it on faith," unquote. As a young person, she had an ear infection which resulted in continuing and irreversible damage to her hearing, nothing the doctors could do to stop her hearing from deteriorating. And so now we meet her at middle age in a not an all that happy marriage, working as a waitress at Armando's restaurant, where a praying group meets weekly at a corner table at the back of her section. Somehow the group learns about her hearing problem, and one night one of the members of the group asks her if she wouldn't like to be made whole again. Before we know it, Ivana is in the middle of the praying group, who all lay hands on her while some prayed out loud, and then the hands began to shake, and one of the women shrieked, "Whack this woman, good Lord, whack her with holy encounter." Well, we can only wonder what effect an encounter like that had on her, one way or the other. Thanks, Hope Knisley, for such a thought-provoking story tonight. Friends, as we told you at the beginning, Hope Knisley lives in Reedley. We've had her on before, and we're always taken by her knowledge and understanding of matters having to do with religion. Recently, a story of hers entitled The Black Box was published in the Pacific Journal. We thank her for tonight's submission and certainly hope she's working on some more stories for us for seasons to come. And so we come to the end of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. If you would like to listen to tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read story again, just get online at kvpr.org and click on to Valley Writers Read. Next week, our author will be Jim Ashford. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio, produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.